The following is a reading from the John S. Randall Peace Page.
When it rains 5 days and the skies turn dark at night.
She had an attitude. She was described as being direct, rough, honest with herself and her life and the songs that she sang. One time at a Philadelphia talent show, a little girl asked her opinion of her singing. "Is you in school?" she reportedly asked the little girl. "Yes, ma'am," said the little girl. "Well, you better stay there," she told the little girl, "because you can't carry a note." Well, that was Bessie Smith. She was the first bisexual, alcoholic, horsewhipped by segregationists, beat out of the songwriting royalties, lemonade-making, dark-skinned singing sensation, whose husband cheated on her with a light-skinned Becky with the good hair, wrote Gwen Tompkins of NPR, National Public Radio. Bessie Smith had a remarkable life and was regarded as one of the greatest singers of her era, nicknamed the Empress of the Blues. She was the most popular female blues singer of the 1920s and the 1930s. Some admirers today say that she laid the foundations for rock and roll, and others would say that her plain-spoken style and rough mannerisms foreshadowed rap. Smith influenced many legendary female singers, from Billie Holiday and Mahalia Jackson to Janis Joplin and Aretha Franklin. But as remarkable as her life and achievements were, it was Bessie Smith's death that would receive the headlines. On September 26, 1937, Smith was critically injured in a car crash along U.S. Route 61 between Memphis, Tennessee and Clarksdale, Mississippi. She would die at the G.T. Thomas Afro-American Hospital at Clarksdale. Rumors, however, continued to persist that Smith died as a result of having been refused admission to a whites-only hospital. A Memphis surgeon, Dr. Hugh Smith, no relation, who was at the scene of the accident, was quoted as saying, "The Bessie Smith ambulance would not have gone to a white hospital. You can forget that. Down in the deep, down south cotton country, no ambulance driver or white driver would have even thought of putting a colored person off to the hospital for white folks." Sources during that time say that Smith bled to death while her ambulance searched for a hospital that would treat black patients. Other reports said the truck driver who hit Smith's vehicle left her for dead. Her controversial death would also be portrayed in the 1959 Edward Albee play, The Death of Bessie Smith. Historians now say that Smith did make it to the hospital, but her injuries were just too severe for her to survive it. She died at the hospital the following morning without regaining consciousness after her right arm was amputated. Smith's childhood in 1890s Tennessee began with a series of setbacks that most people don't get over. Her parents were dead by the time she was 10, and she and her siblings were raised in Chattanooga by an aggrieved older sister. They nearly starved. For money, her sister took in laundry. Young Bessie sang on the street and at churches that sent for the child with the extraordinary voice, according to Tompkins. Smith lived at a time when social change meant the passage of racial segregation laws nationwide. Lynchings of black men and women could number in the hundreds per year, wrote Tompkins. But still she persisted, and she succeeded. Singer Bessie Smith's recording career lasted only 10 years, according to NPR, but during that time, she created a body of work that helped shape the sound of the 20th century. Her first single, Downhearted Blues, written by two women, pianist Lovie Austin and blues singer Alberta Hunter, was a major hit in 1923, selling hundreds of thousands of copies and helping her label, Columbia Records, out of a financial slump. With her subsequent recording, Smith was one of the artists who propelled the fledgling Race Records, market of music targeted to black audiences. Through the rest of the 1920s, Smith became one of the earliest stars of recorded music and a leading figure of what would be come to called classic blues, a genre dominated by African-American women. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame writes, "She was the highest paid black performer of her day and arguably reached a level of success greater than that of any African-American entertainer before her." Many of her songs were about liberated women, but she also incorporated commentary on social issues like poverty, interracial conflict, and female sexuality into her lyrics and was a voice for many minority groups. Bessie had a wonderful way of turning adversity into triumph, and many of her songs are the tales of liberated women, according to biographer Chris Albertson. She's an important voice of feminism and consciousness and humor and strength. She's a liberated woman, and she has also dealt with profound racism, said Paula Cole, Berklee College of Music faculty professor of voice. Other issues she sang about were the chain gang, the convict lease system, and capital punishment. Some of her songs are widely considered to be an early form of African-American protest music, wrote Ryland Rabica in her book called Hip Hop's Amnesia, From Blues and the Black Women's Club Movement to Rap and the Hip Hop Movement. Smith would inspire many others who followed her. As a little girl, Mahalia Jackson listened to Smith on the radio while washing floors in New Orleans and later applied her singing style to gospel music. Billie Holiday also counted Smith as an important musical inspiration. Cultural anthropologist Maureen Mahon makes the case that Bessie Smith led the foundation for rock and roll. Aretha Franklin and Janis Joplin were the shouters of the late 1960s whose artistic ties to Smith were obvious to anyone paying attention, wrote Tompkins. Cass Elliott of the Mamas and Papas called Smith the first soul singer. Bessie Smith's sound and her attitude are also with us in the 21st century and in the sounds of hip-hop contemporaries such as Erykah Badu and Queen Latifah, who played Smith in the 2015 HBO biopic. After Smith's death, more than 7,000 people attended her funeral, but mourners were shocked to find out that the great Bessie Smith had no gravestone. The rumors were that Smith's estranged husband refused to purchase the gravestone after learning that his wife was driving with another man. There were also reports that when the money was raised for a proper gravestone, her husband simply pocketed the money for himself. For more than 33 years, Smith's grave was unmarked. Finally, on August 7, 1970, a proper tombstone was laid at the gravesite of Bessie Smith. The tombstone was paid for by two admirers. The first person was Janis Joplin, who had said, "She showed me the air and taught me how to fill it." The second person was Juanita Green. Green was the little girl who, at a talent contest, was told by Smith to stay in school. Green followed her advice. She would also visit Smith and help her clean house, and Smith would cook her a batch of her fried chitterlings and scallions, according to writer Susanna McCorkle. Green not only stayed in school, but she would grow up to become a nurse and an officer in the Philadelphia NAACP. Bessie Smith's memory now lives on in 160 recordings, cut between 1923 and 1933. Her tombstone, no longer unmarked, reads the heartfelt words of Joplin and Green: "The greatest blues singer in the world will never stop singing." This was a reading from the John S. Randall Peace Page, produced at the KTWH Community Radio Studio in Two Harbors, Minnesota, with the permission of John S. Randall. You can find the John S. Randall Peace Page on Facebook. Just look up John, J-O-N-S, Randall, R-A-N-D-A-L, Peace Page. I'm Kim Leon, your narrator, and I thank my technical assistant, Jackson Leon. This was an entry from September 25th, 2019. Thank you for listening. Nothing